We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your host, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go. Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 266. What is going on, guys? Happy Monday morning. We have a little bit of a different format today. Andrew is not going to be joining me for the first half of the show. We were lining up our schedules and realized that we couldn't get together after the game on Sunday. So what we did was we recorded the majority of the show early on Sunday before the game. But I definitely wanted to come on here and make sure that we talked about and covered the final game of the series and then a few other things that happened over the weekend, obviously, for when the Yankees were in Seattle. But, you know, I think Sunday was potentially a big game and a big swing for the Yankees if they were able to close out that sweep. But unfortunately, they were not, because they can't hit with runners in scoring position at all. And it was a clear reason why the Yankees couldn't win on Sunday and finish out this series in Seattle, which was pretty frustrating. But for the majority of it, they played well. And yeah, we'll talk about that a little bit. Before that, just want to remind everybody, September 15th is the final BP Crew event. That's this coming weekend. Tickets are going to be on sale until Tuesday. Tuesday will be the final day that they'll be on sale. Be closing it out, getting all of our stuff ready with the Yankees, putting together our seating charts. But for the 15th, that's Saturday game. It's $64. You get a t-shirt that goes along with the event. You get a ticket in section 205, and then we'll be doing a pregame a couple hours before the game at the dugout on Saturday. So it's always a good time to drink some beers with everybody and talk some baseball and just, you know, shake some hands, meet some new faces and talk Yankees. So if you are coming out to that, make sure you get your tickets definitely by Tuesday. That's the last day again. And we're running that promo still. If you are captaining a crew of 10 or more, you get your ticket on the house. If you do, if you're captaining a crew that's five or more, you get your ticket at half off. And the reason, again, why we're doing that is because we're just trying to grow this thing. We're trying to grow it to as many people as possible. So if you tell your friends and bring your friends or family, that's a good thing. And the more, the merrier. So this is something that we're really emphasizing and gonna roll even deeper going into next year. And then hopefully we can get some things going with the postseason this year too. As long as everything works out and the Yankees don't screw anything up for us and play too many games outside Yankee Stadium. Or, you know, make sure they make the damn playoffs in the first place. All right, so let's talk a little bit about this series. As of right now, as I'm recording, the Red Sox and Houston Astros are tied. So nobody has won that game at this point. They didn't do pull a Brown Steelers and tie the game and end it as that. The Yankees are eight back of Boston with that tie game. That can change. If they win, it'll be 8.5. If they lose, it'll stay at 7.5. But the wild card lead definitely got smaller today. Yankees are 2.5 over Oakland, up over Oakland, and 3 in the loss column, as they did win today. And so that's getting tighter and tighter. Obviously, we know what happened in Oakland. Did not go our way. The series was tough. They're a tough team. They're young. They're hungry. They can hit the damn ball. You know, they're pitching. Their bullpen is good. Their starting rotation is, you know, it's definitely weakened because of injury, but they have enough guys, and obviously they can roll out a bullpen and take care of, they can take care of the Yankees in that way, that's for sure. So that's something that they have to look forward to. But it's getting tighter and tighter, and as the Yankees are moving forward, they have, you know, obviously these three games coming up in Minnesota, then the last homestand, and then they're on the road. And we'll talk about that. I'll break those down so you guys know exactly what's coming up. Because that's important. There's what, 20 games left, six remaining with Boston, and Boston has a magic number now. So their magic number is 13, as of, you know, before this game. So they have their little countdown starting, and that's great for them. But Yankees are going to try to throw a wrench in that as much as they can and try to win as many games as possible down the stretch. Now, listen, Friday night, Tanaka was very, very good. Andrew and I are going to talk about him in the second half of the show. We did a full mailbag session, and we talked for about, I don't know, 40, 45 minutes on a few other things as well. But Tanaka is definitely one of those guys that we went into a little bit more in depth, talking about what was different on Friday night, because there were some significant differences. His fastball was one of them. But that was a good thing to see, obviously, with all the talks of the wild card. That's the one of the things that we're going to be talking about in this next segment is Boone has some more comments. You know, he's talking about this a little bit more openly. He was a little bit more candid about who he's thinking about pitching that final or the potential wild card game. So, you know, we kind of get into his thoughts on what he's thinking and which guys that, you know, he thinks could line up well for a one game wild card. Saturday was Lance Lynn. You know, he needed to rebound from his last couple starts, and he did. He pitched pretty well, you know, went six innings, gave up two runs, and the Yankees had an opportunity to win that game, and they took advantage of that. So good for Lynn getting back here down the stretch. You know, if the Yankees are going to make any kind of noise or stay in this place ahead of Oakland, they need him to pitch well. Sonny Gray is another guy that we know and we've talked about giving the rotation a little bit of a break. That's going to happen this coming Tuesday when he takes the ball in Minnesota, and basically giving, you know, guys a day off. And I think that's a good thing with, Tanaka going down the stretch. I think obviously Severino could use a day off for who knows what, whether it's resting his body, resting the arm, resting his legs, tucking himself down from his last start and making sure that he's mentally prepared for these things too. So I think having another starting pitcher in the rotation is not a bad thing. I don't think it's going to be a full blown six man rotation by any means, but we will see Sonny Gray go in there and start some games to relieve that. And CeCe's another one of those guys who's going to need, you know, some a little bit more time off down the stretch. He's important, obviously, to this team and the way that they go. And it was nice to see him bounce back on Sunday. The Sunday game obviously did not go. They did not complete the sweep. But it's funny because when you see how he started the game, you're thinking, oh, here we go. Two outs, four singles in a row, drives in two runs. It's kind of crazy how, you know, they get bat on ball early on with him, and then he's able to go in and shut it down, because that's what happened. He shut it down after the beginning of that, after they got those first two early runs. CeCe was very good and went into the sixth inning, and then the bullpen came in, and you know, for the most part, other Dellin Betances in the ninth inning, or I'm sorry, in the eighth inning, was I think a victim of Mitch Haniger is really what happened. He victimized himself by walking Haniger. Don't do that. He let a guy on base, and Haniger took advantage of that, stole a base, advanced to third on a bunt, and then scored, which was the go ahead and ended up being the winning run on a fielder's choice. That was a pretty much a bang bang play. Throw came home and pulled Romine off the home plate a little bit. It was across, had to reach across his body, and Haniger was safe and scored the run. Yankees lost the game. And then he made a ridiculous catch in right field off of a Stanton, looked like a broken bat, little flare into right field, and he made a pretty stupid diving catch to end the game. Literally, the guy was a one man show in the last inning and a half. So unfortunately, that's the way the series ended. They couldn't finish the sweep, but they did win two of three, and that ends the West Coast trip, which is a very good thing, because it was another one of those West Coast trips that is tough, you know, when you go to Oakland and you can't take advantage of those opportunities. And I think that Oakland gained some confidence by that series and the way that they played the Yankees. So they're going now into the stretch knowing that they can compete and knowing that they can beat the New York Yankees. And, for them, a young team having that type of belief, I think that could go a long way. So the Yankees need to, one, get healthy, and two, start playing their asses off and start, you know, pulling it all together, because they definitely have someone on hot on their heels. Speaking of getting healthy, we have a whole bunch of guys that are coming back or starting to come back now, and then new guys who are helping. Before we talk about that, I want to tell you guys about our friends at SeatGeek. Football is back, and SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to every game all season long. Whether you're searching for a last-minute deal, planning a night out, or need to find that perfect gift, SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices, fully guaranteed. There's nothing quite like being there in person, and SeatGeek will get you closer to the action for a great value. SeatGeek is designed to make your ticket buying experience easier than ever. By searching multiple ticket sites and grading every ticket based on value, SeatGeek helps you immediately identify the best seats that fit your budget. Plus, every single purchase is fully guaranteed. No funny business. You're not going to go to the gate and not have your tickets work. So you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. It doesn't end with sports. You can get anything. You can go to concerts. You can get you can get tickets to a comedy event, theater, if that's your thing. Andrew enjoys the theater occasionally, so he goes and gets his tickets there. I actually did get the I use the SeatGeek app. I have it on my phone. I've told you guys before, I got my a buddy of mine Jets tickets that were one of the preseason games. I don't know how nice that is to get friends Jets tickets. Not a great friend if you're getting them Jets tickets, because it's pretty much the most frustrating team to watch. You guys think the Yankees are frustrating? Try being a Jets fan. Best of all, guys, you can get $20 off the SeatGeek, your first SeatGeek purchase. Just download the SeatGeek app, enter promo code Bronx today. It's promo code Bronx for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. All right. Let's talk a little bit about who's healthy, who's back, who's coming back, and who is who has lost their luggage and is playing well because of it. So Friday night, Didi comes back, returning from the DL. Obviously, this is a huge, huge upgrade for the Yankees. It's a big deal. It allows kind of everybody to go back to their positions. And now that Hechavarria is on the team as well, Torres was really going back to second base anyway. But you know, this is an upgrade. Hechavarria has played well, and we've seen his defense. It's stupid. It's ridiculous. The guy has an unbelievable glove, and I think he's hit a little bit better than I expected. But you know, Didi is a much better upgrade, obviously, from a hitting standpoint. And then you know, you're not losing anything by having Didi in the field, because he's you know, one of the better defensive shortstops. But look, the bottom line is it's good to see him back. The Yankees are easing him in. He's not playing all of the games. It seems like they're trying to get him around six innings for these games. They're trying to ease him in, make sure that nothing, he doesn't have anything you know, hold him back as far as injury, and make sure that he is you know, fully healthy for this stretch. And you know, it's important, and because they do have Hechavarria, I think they have a little bit of room to be able to do that. So I expect him, honestly, to start playing in this next series almost regularly, and then and we'll see Didi back, you know, hopefully full strength and finding his stride, because that's big. We need him to get going and find that offense. We've seen how much, you know, he can get streaky. We've seen some ridiculously hot streaks from him, where we're all saying he's the best offensive shortstop in the league, because he did look like that in the first few the first month of the season, really, and then he went on a horrible slump. So we need to make sure that he gets back and is pitching or is playing well and is able to line himself up for the stretch run, and then hopefully either a one game playoff or into the playoffs. Aaron Judge, the man, the myth, the legend, is finally, looks like he's really on the mend. It looks like a reality that he is going to be coming back, which is, you know, you hear about these dry swings, and now he's taking batting practice and if you will, he's getting these wet swings in. He's getting the actual swings, hitting the ball, making sure that the wrist and everything is going well, and feels good taking swings, and, you know, making, when he's making contact, you know, the ball is going to hit the bat different ways. You want to make sure that he's feeling all sorts of things in batting practice to get as much as many swings as he can, I think, to make sure that wrist is not still injured and is not going to really affect him to a point where he can't swing the bat effectively and, you know, and be the best Aaron Judge that he can be. Obviously, even if he's not if you need, even if he feels it a little bit and it's a pain tolerance thing, which, you know, they talked about early in this injury, they said that that was going to be a possibility when he returns. They just need to make sure that it is one of those, you know, if it is a pain tolerance issue at some point, that he's able to still play and play at a productive and high level. I do expect that. I expect Aaron Judge to, at this point, you know, he's saying that it doesn't hurt. So that's all very good. I'm circling. I still have my hopes on next Saturday, as the time when he is going to be coming back. It does meet, close to what their timeline said, of when he'd be back. It's the, you know, obviously the home series coming up too. So I think it would line up well for, an Aaron Judge return coming back home against Toronto. So get your tickets, get your tickets to the Aaron Judge show, September 15th, only $64. There you go. Upcoming. Oh yeah. And then before, you know, these guys are coming back from injuries. Didi's back. Obviously Gary Sanchez is back, but the guy that lost his luggage, I almost forgot to talk about this. Andrew McCutchen is officially, hitting home runs for the New York Yankees. Friday night, he hit, his first home run as a New York Yankee, then followed it up the next day on Saturday with another home run. Look, that's good to see. The guy is, you know, he was definitely struggling, you know, his first little bit, with the Yankees. He talked about that, how, things were a little bit crazy, and I can understand that, how he's flying back and forth from different coasts. You know, joining a new team, there's a lot of, whirlwind in, when you get traded like that, I'm sure. And then he goes and loses his luggage, or he didn't lose his luggage. The hotel lost his luggage in Seattle. And if you haven't seen it, it's pretty funny. It's all over the place now, but, he put it on his Instagram story and was talking about how he has no clothes and he doesn't know if he's going to leave the hotel and all these things. I didn't realize, you know, what kind of a funny personality he was, but he's definitely got that clown side of him, which is cool. I like that. It's good to see, that he's got that personality side. And I think it's funny that he didn't realize that he actually, before he went to sleep, he was wearing clothes and did actually have clothes in the room. So he went into the city with the clothes that he was wearing the night before, thanks to old sis on the phone to say, hey, Andrew, you actually got into the hotel room with clothing on. So you do have clothes. Good for him. So maybe we should start losing some luggage, because apparently you hit two home runs after you lose your luggage. Speaking of luggage, they're going to be going to pack their luggage, putting it in the airplane and going to Minnesota. They're all right there. They're on their way right now. This is a series that they should win, you know, plain and simple. But how many times have we said that about inferior opponents and the New York Yankees? They got to take advantage of them. You know, I feel like I'm on repeat here with the same damn thing with a lot of these series coming up. You gotta hit with runners in scoring position, even against bad teams. And if you're doing what they did today and go 2-for-15 with runners in scoring position, I don't care who you're playing. It doesn't matter, because all they got to do is scratch a couple runs across. Because if you have 15 opportunities with runners in scoring position and you're only taking advantage of that twice, it doesn't take a lot of runs to beat you. And you know, unless you're hitting the ball out of the ballpark, it's not going to do the job. The Yankees have to do better than that. And that's against good teams and against bad teams. And the Minnesota Twins are right now falling in the on the side as, you know, not a terrible team, but they're not a good team. And they have the upcoming schedule with their final home series. They have Toronto, Baltimore, and Boston. And when you're looking at Toronto and Baltimore, these are two teams that are so far done and so far gone. Toronto, I don't even know who they have pitching anymore. Half their pitching staff is obliterated. Baltimore, they brought up everybody from AAA Norfolk, and you know, they're playing as a shell of themselves. I think even more so than the last time we played them. So these are teams that they gotta take advantage of and beat these and get some W's, because, like I said earlier, the Oakland A's are pining. They're trying to catch the New York Yankees, and that is a big mission for a young team that is, you know, they're hungry and they're playing with house money at this point. So the Yankees have a huge target on their back as far as the wild card goes. And then Boston, obviously, at home, and then they which is good. I think it's good to have that Boston series at home first before they go on that final road trip, because, you know, if you can do some damage against these bad teams, and then who knows what you do against Boston, at least you know where you stand at that point going on the road, and you have the opportunity to take advantage of the home series. The Yankees do play better at home. They didn't on their last trip when they were there, and they missed a golden opportunity to win some games. So they got to take advantage of it here. But I think, again, it's good to, if we're playing Boston a home and away, it's good to have the home series first, and then go to Fenway Park where they've struggled, and the Red Sox have pretty much outscored them by two. You know, I think I looked it up earlier. It was an average of 4-8. They're outscoring the Yankees in the series at Fenway this year. You know, but even before that, the Yankees have to go to the godforsaken Trop in Tampa, where they're 1-5 this year. Unfreaking believable. But that place, in all its voodoo, they have to go there. And again, similar to what Oakland is, it's a young team in Tampa. These guys are playing much better than anybody ever expected. Certainly better than I expected, because I did the cricket to lose a game to them, which again did look good early in the season. But they definitely have been playing some good baseball, and they have some kids who can play, especially offensively. And then, you know, their whole bullpenning fiasco that for whatever reason the Yankees can't hit. So that's going to be a big series, going to the Trop, finishing the season up with the voodoo at the Trop, and then going to Fenway Park. Pretty good stuff right there. So the Yankees are lining up. Andrew and I are going to talk more about the you know, what's lining up over the pitching staff. We're going to go into Tanaka start in more detail, and then we have a whole bunch of mailbags that we're going to be going through and answering all the questions that came in. But yeah, guys, this was fun. I will talk to you probably next Sunday if you're not going to the event, because I'm actually going to be on the road. I have a whole bunch of work stuff this week, and I will be in Chicago. So I believe Andrew will be on, Neil Keefe, I believe, is filling in for me on Thursday. So before I get out of here, thank you for listening. I'm going to throw you now to Andrew, who is going to start our conversation about Boone's comments. And then don't forget, we got voicemails at the end of the show. All right, guys, have a great week. Go Yankees.
We have a little bit of a new development in the who will start the wild card game saga, because, Scott, as we know, that's all people are really talking about. That's, as we've been talking about for, what, 4 weeks at this point, who's going to start that wild card game?
It's already been beaten like a dead horse, and it will continue to get beaten until we are actually at that game and we actually have a guy on the bump with a ball in his hand. Speculation, baby.
So we're flying to Oakland, you and me?
Yeah, flying to Oakland. If we're flying to Oakland, there's no doubt who's pitching. We have one guy who's pitching who hasn't lost a game on the road. That guy.
Well, so the new developments are that Boone was asked, as he is before every game, I think, who's going to start the wild card game. But this is the first time he's actually had some comments that we're telling. He said, I think it comes down to who is pitching well and what does the matchup look like. Where are we bullpen-wise? I think these next few weeks will tell us who that guy is. And in my mind, I'm trying to get inside the head of Boone. I think it comes down to Severino, Tanaka, or Happ. Do you agree?
Yeah, I don't think there's anybody else that we could really consider. If someone's going to say CeCe, and we're recording this before CeCe start on Sunday, but to me, he's just not as, right now, you cannot rely on a guy like CeCe. So yeah, those three guys are there, and the reason Severino is there is because of what he's done for the team and the potential of Severino. But if we're talking about the two guys that are pitching the best on the Yankee staff, it's certainly Tanaka and Happ.
Definitely. Severino has and should be the best pitcher on the staff, but he's not pitching like that right now. But if we're looking at it's going to be Oakland, so let's look at each of those guys' seasons against Oakland. Severino has had two starts. He's pitched 8 2/3 innings, given up 11 hits and 6 earned runs. Most of that damage came in the start last week in Oakland, and he had a good start at home early in the season against Oakland. So he's really 1-for-2 against Oakland so far. Tanaka has not faced them at all. Could that be a good thing? Because Oakland hasn't seen him. And then Happ has only had that one start on Tuesday last week, 6 innings and just 2 hits and 1 run.
Yeah, and so when we're looking at that, first of all, Happ has just been, you know, he's had a couple tiny little bumps since he's been with the Yankees, but really the entire time he's been here, he's been pitching well against the toughest competition. So I feel like there's a trust level there with him right now, just because he's that veteran guy, can pitch around things. And I think there's really a similar mindset with Tanaka, in that sense that he's going to keep you in games. He's going to keep the offense off balance. And then what we saw against the Oakland A's with Severino, that was just infuriating, is that, you know, when his breaking stuff is not there, when he doesn't have that sharp slider, that has, you know, such good left to right movement, or right to left movement, the guys are teeing off on his fastball, and you know, he's got to have everything working for him to be super effective, at least at this point. Whereas early in the season, you know, he could live off of maybe a mediocre slider and just a dominant fastball that he was able to pinpoint. He doesn't have the location right now for him to be that same dominant guy. But when you have these other two guys, if they don't have their best stuff, you still have the confidence that they can work in and out of trouble.
I think that's a big thing. What the Yankees are going to be looking for in that wild card game is just get us into the sixth inning and in a good spot where we can use our dominant bullpen. That's what they need. They can't have somebody go out there and have a blow up start like Severino did last year, or like Severino did against Oakland the other night. Where Tanaka, every single one of his games except the ones against Detroit, he's gotten through the fifth inning. So if you can get through the fifth inning, if you can get through the fifth inning, or Tanaka through the fifth inning, I think then Boone just says, thank you very much, let's hand it to the bullpen.
Yeah, and at that point, I mean, if you have that game and you get to the fifth, sixth inning, and then you're handing it off to the bullpen, and let's just, for conversation's sake, say you win that game, then you have Severino, your guy, you know, the one that that you really do want to be your number one starter, has the potential to go out there and pitch game one. So it would line up nicely if one of those other guys is pitching really well towards the end of the season, and we're still seeing hopefully we're seeing some progress from Severino again. I feel like we've been going back and forth with, yes, this guy's progressing, no, he's not progressing, yes, he's progressing, no, he's not progressing. You know, I think the his last starts need to just clear the air with where he is. I think that would be really nice to know.
Here's why I think it's going to be either Tanaka or Severino, because then that would allow them, if they face Boston in the next round, to pitch Happ twice. And I think one of the big reasons they got Jay Happ is because of his numbers against Boston. So in a five-game series, you could go Happ in games 1 and 5, and then Severino or Tanaka in game 2, CeCe in game 3, and then Severino or Tanaka in game 4.
Yeah,
and I mean, that allows you to get your best matchups, what they think maybe on paper are their best matchups against Boston.
Right. I mean, Tanaka also, I feel like there's confidence with you know, him going against the Red Sox too. He's pitched well at Fenway Park. So he's got that behind him, where, you know, Severino, we just don't know what we're getting right now. That's the biggest problem. The unknown is the big problem with Severino, and I think that's, you know, we said this. That's why there's more confidence in these other guys, because they're able to get through, you know, an area where they're not at their best. And Severino, I'm not so sure he can do that right now.
And right now, Tanaka looks like their best pitcher.
No doubt.
He was dominant on Friday against Seattle, 8 innings, only 3 hits. He's now 7-0 career against Seattle. And then in his last 5 starts, 34 innings, 2.12 ERA, and a 6.53 OPS allowed for Tanaka. So really, since he came back from injury, he's had one bad start, and the rest of them have been either great or very, very good, certainly good enough for the Yankees.
So we always joke about how Tanaka has to get up for a night game, or if it's against another Japanese pitcher. But I mean, this is kind of like going up against a Japanese pitcher. You're in Seattle, huge Japanese audience. Yeah, huge Japanese audience. You know, it's where Ichiro came. Ichiro's still there. They have a very big influence with the Japanese market as well. So it's kind of like him going home, as close as he can get to home, really, for pitching. So, you know, he wanted to be on his best mark. I guarantee they were showing the game over in Japan, probably on more national networks. So this was one of those games where he's going to circle and say, okay, let's do this. And, you know, for the wild card game, any big game like that, also a similar situation. It's kind of a joke in the sense that he does that, but it's funny that every single time there is a big game that is exposed to the Japanese markets, he's right there ready to go and dominate.
And I know I've said that what what Tanaka did in October last year, you can't just bank on that happening again, because he was filthy last October.
Yeah.
And that kind of came out of nowhere. I know he was pitching well in the second half, but did anyone really honestly think that Tanaka was going to go out there and dominate in the postseason?
Well, I mean, there were so many memories of the first half Tanaka still in a lot of people's memories. So they had to, you know, they had to make sure that that was really gone, and that we just didn't see the second half Tanaka more of an anomaly, but it was actually the real guy. I don't know. Look, the way we've seen in his career, he's gotten stronger as the season has gone on. Last year was a really good example of that, and then this year that's exactly what he's showing. He's showing that he's throwing the more the fastball harder. He's seems like he has a lot of confidence in his stuff right now, and the results are there. I mean, he's pitching phenomenal right now. So I like the fact that Tanaka trends better towards the end of the season.
Yeah, it's certainly a good thing. I guess it's the opposite of what Severino does, but you're right about the fastball, because he threw it 30% of the time in his start on September 1st against Detroit, and then 40% of the time against Seattle on Friday. So that does tell me he has confidence in his fastball. He had absolutely no confidence in his fastball earlier in the season. Do you remember that start against Miami very early at Yankee Stadium?
Yeah.
It was like 35 degrees out. I don't think he threw one fastball.
Yeah,
and now, I know it was a miserable start where he got hit around by the minor league Marlins, and you're sitting there saying he threw 70 something pitches and 65 of them were splitters and sliders. Like, what the hell are you doing out there? But now we're starting to see, okay, I'm feeling good. I'm throwing my fastball. That's a good sign.
You know, and I wonder if it goes back to when he was in Japan and the amount of innings he would throw. He threw a ton of innings when he was over there. And they would let him go longer. And it just seems like as the season's going on and his body gets more into the flow of a game or into the flow of the season, it just becomes more loose. I don't know if that's a temperature thing as the season goes on, but it's like his body loosens up once he gets later in the season, whereas a lot of guys wear it down. I don't think Tanaka has that. It's like, you know, the rubber arm, he's got that. He's kind of has that for his pitching mechanics. He seems to get better and more seasoned as the season goes on and as the days go on in the year. And I mean, that's awesome to see, because he does have, especially now, he's throwing the fastball even harder. I think he's throwing it more often. It's definitely in direct comparison to what Rothschild has really shown what these guys are supposed to do for the past few years. I mean, they've had the highest curveball rate in the major leagues, definitely last year, yeah. And then in the beginning of this year, they were up there as well. So Rothschild,
you mean it's the opposite of what Rothschild has been teaching.
It's contradictory to what he's been teaching.
Yes, yes. And maybe they finally realized that this has only gotten us so far, and our pitchers are not where they should be. So let's do something different. Maybe. I mean, how many times did we talk about, is that the reason that Sonny Gray was pitching like crap?
I mean, it's a beautiful excuse for Sonny Gray, but it's something that I can't rely on. I can't hang my head on that one. But yeah, I mean, it's something to think about for sure, because there's no doubt the strategy for the starting rotation for Larry Rothschild was more curveballs, more off speed, less fastballs. And they worked more off of the off speed stuff than they did the fastball. And now we're seeing a bit of a shift.
So it's September 10th. We have 3 weeks to go. I guarantee you we will talk about this again.
Oh,
but right now,
1,000%.
Make a prediction. Who's it going to be in that one-game wild card?
As of right now, the way things stand, I see Tanaka as the guy.
I agree with you.
It's hard to go away from the hot hand when you have to win one game. It really is.
It's also, I think, lines up perfectly. If you can go with Tanaka, it lines up perfectly for the Boston series after that. And I think that's going to play a factor in it. I know you can't just play for that 5-game series, that you have to win that one game first, but that doesn't mean you can't have some things in place for it, which is the smart thing to do. Okay, let's get into some mailbag questions. If you guys want to submit mailbags, go to bronxpinstripes.com/podcast, tweet us, Facebook us. We don't get any questions on Instagram, but you can Instagram us as well. First up is from David. Did you guys see Joe Girardi's breakdown of Gary Sanchez's issues on MLB Network? He said the issues are mechanical but fixable. Then you hear Boone talk. He doesn't say anything is wrong with his mechanics. Clearly, Joe had a better impact on Gary last year than Boone has had this year. Do you guys ever see Gary becoming a solid defensive catcher, and would you still trust him in the playoffs? I did see this Girardi breakdown. I saw the video of it on Twitter. Did you see it?
I did. He was talking about the base. That's really where he was focused. He was focused around the bottom of Sanchez's, you know, where he sits in his stance.
And his right knee, he pointed out how his right knee is kind of pointed inward, or he's kind of leaning to his left in a sense. So if a ball on this one, it was in the Severino game, any ball to his right, he was not going to be able to get down and block it.
Right.
And it was pretty clear when he, I think he compared him to Yan Gomes, right? And how Gomes was very centered and able to shift left and right to block balls. It was pretty clear that Gary Sanchez's mechanics don't look right.
When you have when he's talking about the base and you're not able to go left or right with, you know, at the blink of an eye, or the blink of a Luis Severino fastball coming across the plate, then you have a problem when you're trying to get in position to block that ball. And I mean, the blocking has been the one thing that everybody talks about, the one thing that has been such an issue. And I went back and I watched all of the pitches that drove me insane. I can't believe I did it, but I watched the first couple innings of their start last time too, just to get another perspective of it on a different day, so that my mind wasn't going absolutely insane and I wasn't just like wasn't cringing at every single thing. And I mean, there's no doubt about it. There was blame on both sides for both of those guys. There was a lot of frustration between the two of them. You could cut it with a knife. It was so thick. But yes, Sanchez was not in a position to be able to block those balls. And I, you know, when you have a 97 mile an hour fastball coming at you and you think it's a changeup on the inside of the plate, and then, you know, you get a fastball coming toward the outside of the plate, it's a big difference and there's not a lot of time to react. But when you don't have a strong base, when you don't have your body in position to make that adjustment, it makes it even harder. And that's where I have a problem with the way that Gary Sanchez is doing things with his mechanics and the way that he, this has been a problem for a long time. And this isn't new that Girardi pointed this out. Like, we've seen this before. We know that he has a problem getting down to his knees and shifting side to side effectively.
2 years of this stuff.
Yeah, so this is not a breaking news. This is just Girardi saying it again. I think people forgot the reason why a lot of this was happening. And yeah, I do think a lot of it's mechanical. And that's why I've always said, like, this guy can make adjustments, but it has to be him doing it in the off season. You're not going to make those changes in the middle of a season. And Girardi kind of alluded to that towards the end of it. I was so happy he said that. It made me feel so good because he's like, he said he could change it, but it probably won't happen till the off season. And that's right. Well, I mean, that's the clear answer. You can make slight adjustments and you can try to make as many adjustments as you possibly can and try to fix things. But honestly, it's not in a big situation when you're not thinking about it. And when you're just reacting, to what you know and what your body knows, and your muscle memory at that point takes over. And unless you have drilled it 1,000 times, you're not going to do it.
But don't we see Gary Sanchez get in bad habits in little stretches where he'll look great for a few innings or a few games and then he relapses? So it's almost like he's able to make the corrections, but they're not permanent. They're only temporary.
Right. And that's a lot of it's repetition. It's getting those reps. It's not having the amount of muscle memory. I don't know how else to explain it. Muscle memory is what gets you into those positions. Your muscles do it before you have to think about doing it. You just automatically go. And if you drill that 1,000 times, I mean, you used to make fun of the drills where the guys roll the ball out, the pitchers go in, screw the ball in and throw it to first in spring training. But you know, I would balk at you laughing at them, because honestly, like, just going through those motions is helping the body and the memory and the muscles, you know, train themselves to know, okay, this is what I do. This is the motion that I do with my hand. This is how I set my feet. This is what I go. Even though it's slow, looks dumb, looks a little league, like, you do those 1,000 times and you don't have to think anymore. Your body just goes. It just does it. And so I think that's what he needs.
In the offseason, then, you just set up a pitching machine and you have it pound it right into the dirt 2 feet in front of Gary Sanchez 1,000 times every day. And he just needs to block them. Like, how else do you get the muscle memory then?
Well, no, that's what you do. You have to drill. You have to drill all of these things.
How has somebody not gone to Gary Sanchez and done that at this point? He's now in year three of his career.
Right. I don't know if he could potentially be not doing it in the best way, that's training himself. Like, maybe his training ways, his methods are not as effective as they should be. I don't know. I don't know what his training regimen is in the offseason and how he drills the actual mechanics and the you know, the staples of blocking a ball and the staples of catching. I don't know what his, I would love to know. I would absolutely love to know what his regimen is for training in the offseason, really. Not physically, but when we're talking about mechanics and catching. I would love to know. It would be Super interesting to know that and who he's working with and what they're teaching and what kind of things they're really hammering home, because these are the things that they need to do. Could he be a very good defensive catcher? Hell yes, he could be a very defensive, a good defensive catcher. He's already got the intangibles. He's got the things that you need. He's got the ability to catch. He can receive the ball well. He, you know, pitchers apparently like throwing to him when he's blocking balls and pitching and catching well
some of the time.
and you know, he has the rifle arm. So if he's able to gain, and maybe the groin is part of the problem, maybe because of the flexibility. I'm not saying that there's an injury, but it could be just tight. He could, you know, the flexibility, the range of motion in his hips and the groin could absolutely affect you going left to right and up and down. So, you know, maybe there's part of that. Maybe the training regimen on the physical side needs to be adjusted so that he's working more on flexibility and range of motion in the groin and hip, because those are all part of, you know, getting in position.
Does he need some of the tough love that Girardi gave him? Because I understand that maybe the relationship was not the best. And I think that was one of the reasons why Brian Cashman wanted to move on from Girardi. But Gary Sanchez was a better player the last year and a half under Joe Girardi than he's been under Aaron Boone.
I mean, he's been hurt, and he's been offensively has been terrible too. So it's hard to say that the catching is the reason. You know, the Girardi is the reason for his.
Not saying
his
he's the reason. I'm not saying that.
Well, here's what I think. If you're talking about tough love, like, I don't think when you're having a tough love thing, when you're talking about this, he needs some kind of a. I don't know who his catching mentor is. I don't know who the guy is that drills in him. We should probably look this up. I'm gonna look it up and see who he works with in the offseason. But I feel like that guy, the guy who is his actual personal coach, needs to be a hard ass and get in his ass with this stuff. No doubt about it. Needs to get all over him on these mechanics. I don't know if that's the manager's position to do that. The manager has a million things to do, and yeah, he should have a good relationship with the catcher so that they can communicate effectively, but being hard, like a hard ass in him in the middle of the season, to me that doesn't really do much.
You remember, so we had Pedro Martinez take Luis Severino under his wing. Maybe we get one of the Molina brothers to take.
I would love that.
Gary, I mean, Jose Molina. What's Jose Molina up to?
What's Pudge doing? How about Pudge? Pudge is a Yankee. Pudge is a Yankee.
But I would say that Jose Molina has a more similar body type to Gary Sanchez than Pudge. Maybe Pudge in Texas when he was doing steroids, he was a little bit thicker. But once he got to Detroit and with the Yankees, he had slimmed down. So I don't know, Molina. He has the last home run in old Yankee Stadium. It's kind of a sentimental thing. He was catching. He had the personal catcher stuff with AJ Burnett in 2009 World Series ring. I'd much rather have Molina train Gary Sanchez than Pudge.
I gotta tell you, there's probably no better coaching family than the Molina brothers. I mean, they're literally like a traveling catching circus.
I mean, shit, they breed catchers.
Yeah, they're unbelievable. So, and they can do it at any weight, at any time. It doesn't matter what they look like. They can catch the ball and they can do a good job. So, yeah,
good
I have
point.
No problem
Thank
with
you
that.
For bringing that up. That for anyone saying that Gary Sanchez was too big to be a catcher, go look how fat and out of shape Jose Molina was. And he was like a cat behind the plate.
Yeah. He had those reflexes. That's one of those things. He was quick, and he was, and I guarantee he had really good range of motion. Was flexible in his hips and in the groin area. Like this guy had the motion.
Mrs. Molina knows what's up.
He had the motion and the ocean. Yeah, he was able to handle anything he could possibly do down there. No problems. The Molina brothers also phenomenal. But the you have to train your body to do those things. And if you're not in physical shape to get to those positions either, that's also a problem. So, you know, I think there's a number of things, but again, to me, none of this stuff gets fixed in the middle of the season. You can fix short term. You can there could be reminders. And like you said, we see short term fixes, but it's not something that's going to be a fundamental change. And I think that's what he needs. I think he needs a fundamental change behind the plate in the way that he, his mechanics are and how he, you know, he breaks down with whatever pitch is coming. I think it's an issue.
Do they trust him in the playoffs? Does Gary Sanchez catch the one game wild card?
Yes. No doubt about it.
I agree.
If everybody's healthy, you can't DH him because either Stanton or Judge would be in the DH spot. And, you know, if you're putting Gary Sanchez there, that means someone else with a good bat is sitting, and you have to put a lesser bat in theory with Austin Romine. And it's not as good.
Well, so I tweeted out this stat the other day that about WAR. So Gary Sanchez and Austin Romine have played the same number of games. I think it's now up to 72 or 73 games each. And they both have, according to FanGraphs, a 1.0 WAR. And Gary Sanchez is having by far the worst season of his life, and Austin Romine is having by far the best season of his life.
Yeah, I mean, so, it's the offensive production. That's when you see the damage that he's still done with the home runs and the RBIs and you're hitting the ball hard. So,
but I think what that highlights is the fact that even though Gary Sanchez has been piss poor, he is still, in theory, providing the Yankees some value. It goes to show how important, if he is back to his old self, how important he can be to this team. And I think that's why he needs to be getting right, catching in the big games, catching at the end of September, catching in October. Okay, next question is from Rob Scaleri at Scaleri Jr. on Twitter. What is wrong with Seve's slider? Is it mechanics, injury, mental? What is it?
I'm going to make this really simple. I have no goddamn idea. I have no goddamn idea what the hell is wrong with Severino. I don't know. Andrew doesn't know either. I can tell you that much right now. We've talked about this for weeks. I don't think the Yankees know. I don't think Severino knows. Gary Sanchez certainly
doesn't
know. That's
the scary part. If the Yankees and Severino don't know, I mean, we don't know. That's obvious. I mean, we're two fans who have slightly informed opinions because we've watched an obscene amount of baseball over the last 20 years, and we talk about it for 2 hours a week. So if we don't know, that's one thing. But if the Yankees and Severino can't figure out what the hell is going on with him, that's a pretty damn big problem.
Yeah. One thing I do know that needs to be fixed right now, and it seems like it's certainly has a bit of a problem, is the relationship between Severino and Sanchez. They're not on the same page. That's 100% obvious. And their last two starts together have been yelling at each other. Literally Severino yelling right at Gary Sanchez twice.
And the one you're talking about, the Tampa Bay one when Gary Sanchez loafed it, and then the one in Oakland.
Yes. So these two need to get on the same page. They need to make sure that they're both communicating in the same way that each one actually receives the information and can process the information, because right now it's a broken battery to me.
And it was working. Doesn't look like early in the season, because remember we talked about the stats of Severino, how he was actually the best at his best when he was throwing to Gary Sanchez.
Yeah. Whatever it is right now, they're off. There's no doubt about it. And there's visible frustration, and you cannot have that when you're going into a start, because nobody's going to be at their best if you have visible frustration. That's the other thing I noticed from the other day. There's still visible frustration on Severino, and Severino was definitely, I don't know if he was overthrowing, but he was frustrated from the beginning of that start. And there was a clear issue between the two of them, and that can't happen.
And if that were to happen early in a one-game wild card, that could be disaster.
1,000%.
Frank Golden has the next question. I am hearing a lot of, quote, if Boston were not having a once-in-20-years type season, everyone would be just fine. What would your personal assessment of the season be?
Yeah, they're still, at the end of the day, they're having a very good season when you look at what their record is and how they've overcome a lot of these injuries. They've overcome a ton of obstacles. They've been dealing with a second half where their number one pitcher is not pitching. Like, he's pitching like a four or a five. Like, he's not that guy right now. So, and they've come through. They've come through with losing their star player in right field, losing their shortstop, losing their catcher. I mean, these guys have gone through a ridiculous amount of injuries. The pitcher that they thought was going to be their number two is now relegated to mop up duty in the freaking bullpen.
I was going to just say that. I mean, their number two, or at the very least, number three. Sonny Gray was supposed to be, at worst, their number three starter this year.
Yeah, so they've overcome a ridiculous amount of problems and obstacles, and they're still putting up a good season. So when we're looking at that, and you take a step back and you look at that, then yes, it's been a frustrating season. Honestly, it's been a very frustrating season for as a fan. I think for us talking about it on a weekly basis, one, because the second half has been the same story every freaking day, it seems like, or every week at least, there's the same sentiment. When we look back at what happened in this season, in the grand scheme of things, when you look at everything, they're having a damn good season.
But I think it's been so frustrating because they're not playing as well as they're capable of playing.
Right.
We saw how good this team could be in May and June. And since the All-Star break, they have been a shell of that team. And injuries are not an excuse for how sloppy and how poor they've been playing at times. They still have enough talent on this roster, even if Aaron Judge is out with a broken wrist, and even if Didi is out with a heel issue, they still should be playing better as the team with the 25 guys that they have healthy than they've been playing. And I think that is why it's so frustrating. It has not been a fun second half by any means. every win seems like it's been painful. Every loss seems like it's just been in some disastrous fashion. Or like you said, same old shit with this team. The same things keep happening. It's been very frustrating. And I know as a fan, I've not had as much fun following the 2018 team as I had following the 2017 team.
And I think of that a lot of it is expectations and knowing that last year was
100%
was a team that we didn't expect to do anything. A lot of people didn't expect to do anything. And then all of a sudden these guys are playing really well and get to the point. I'm going to go into the next mailbag from Gilbert Gill. He says, with some of the Yankees finally returning to the first half form, what do you think the lineup will be for either the end of the regular season or the postseason? And I think this is part of the issue of why we're having such a problem with it. We don't see the same lineup out there that we did in the beginning of the season and towards the end of last. We had a much more dynamic and potent offense in the beginning, and then you start adding pieces like Gleyber and Andujar, but you start losing other guys. So I think once the Yankees are getting back to their potential and the fact that the Yankee fans have seen what the potential is of the first half Yankees, we're like, what's happening here? Why can't we've added some guys. I know we've lost some guys, but we've also added guys. Why can't they get back there? And that's frustrating when you know the potential in season of the same team. So to Gilbert's question, what do we think the lineup's going to be towards the end of the season and into the postseason?
I think, they're... depending on who they're facing, a righty or a lefty pitcher, I think it's going to change. Because I think especially when Judge is back, you're going to see an all right-handed heavy outfield especially. So mm-hmm. McCutchen will be in left, Hicks still in center, Judge or Stanton in right, and then the other one will be DHing against lefties.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. And I think adding McCutchen to the mix now, especially if he keeps up this little tirade and if he's getting really comfortable and keeps losing his luggage and is super hot, it's a big add. I mean, and a guy like McCutchen who has all the skill in the world, can turn it on for a team like this towards the end of the season. It seems like, talent at that point, like you forget about everything else. You forget about any injuries you've had or how old you are. And like your talent just comes to the surface at that point. And if we're looking at what they're going to look like at that point too, towards the end of the season, Gleyber's even now, which I disagree with where it currently stands, but we're going to see the bottom of this lineup. If everybody's healthy and everybody's back, is going to be unbelievably potent, the bottom of the lineup. And that's
Andujar and
Torres. And that is one of the big reasons in the beginning of the season why the Yankees were wearing out pitchers. It's because top to bottom, 1 through 9, anybody could hurt you. And that's where we will be.
A fully healthy lineup, you could potentially see Voit, Torres, and Andujar as the final three in the order, which it's not bad.
No, and the way things are going right now, you have a lefty like Greg Bird who's going to be coming off the bench for...
if he makes the roster.
If he makes the roster, but he will. He will make the roster.
I think, I know it's tempting to look ahead, but the Red Sox have two really good lefties in that rotation with Price and Sale. So you're mm-hmm. going to see a lot of... you could see those guys 3 out of the 5 games.
Yeah.
So you're going to see all of those right-handed hitters for the Yankees. Against righties, though, it's a different story because you might see Gardner in there. Who knows? If Voit cools off a little bit, you could see Greg Bird getting a start.
Could see Neil Walker. I mean, Neil Walker batting from the left side.
He's much better from the left side, absolutely. And I think Hicks is a little bit better from the left side. I know that was the... But Brian Cashman sold us on the fact that he crushes lefties, but Aaron Hicks has been pretty consistent from the left side this year. They've been leading him off. I could see them even leading him off against a right-handed pitcher because he's got a good on-base percentage, and then you get that switch hitter at the top of the order type thing.
Yeah. So there's a lot more flexibility, and I think adding McCutchen into there too really gives them a ton of flexibility against the lefties, and I think that's another big reason. You look at what Cashman did at the trade deadline and then with the waiver deadline. What does that line up to? Hap can pitch against Boston, and they added another impact right-handed bat who now kind of counterbalances or counter. It's really a counterpunch to what Boston can offer as far as their dominant 1-2. So you can tell that these moves are also made to counteract what Boston's good at.
And the next question is also about the lineup. It's from Vinny Lula. I know we can't do anything about it now, but with an eye towards next year, should we begin questioning Marcus Thames's role? Is how bad this team has hit this year. How much of this can be attributed to teaching the approach to hitting that is being coached? And I think what he's talking about specifically is the runners in scoring position issues and some of those bat on ball issues that we've seen at times. The Yankees, the way they're built, the way Brian Cashman built them, they're going to hit home runs, they're going to strike out, and they're going to walk. They rank first in team home runs and ninth in team strikeouts. So that's the team that he has assembled.
I think when you see a full season of the Yankees with as they're currently constructed, or as they will into next year, with guys like Andujar and Gleyber Torres, you know, we'll see a little bit less of that. Torres is hitting the ball out of the park like nobody expected, but he can still make a lot of contact. He's going to hit for average. So I still think we're going to see more of those guys. They're leading in home runs. They're number one. I mean, is that such a terrible thing? You'd like to see more of the other. You'd like to see more of the contact and runners in score position.
Problem.
There's no doubt situational hitting should be an emphasis, and these guys should work on that. But I mean, I'm not ready to say that Marcus Thames is role is in jeopardy by any means.
I'm not either, but do you think that their approach in with runners in scoring position and with the bases loaded, we talked about the stark differences between them and the Red Sox, and the Red Sox offense, they also hit a lot of home runs, but they also get the job done when they just have guys on base and need to get them in with hits.
Yeah, I mean, but look at last year, they didn't hit any home runs. Like, they added one guy into the mix, and now they're hitting a ton of home runs. I mean,
but supposedly Alex Cora comes in and says, hey, swing up at launch angle.
Right.
Hashtag launch angle.
Okay, so
it's this revolutionary thing that I'm teaching.
That doesn't change what we're doing here. But the thing is what my point is that last year they showed how effective they could be with hitting the ball in the gap and not hitting the ball over the park and still having a relatively potent offense. So it's a different construction. But yes, I think that has to be part of what they work on and part of the game plan. They have to get better at that. There's no doubt.
Anytime something goes wrong, it's immediately blame the hitting coach, blame the pitching coach, blame the manager. But when things are going right, it's, oh my God, they have amazing players. That's why they're so good. Has nothing to do with the coaches when things are going right. So that's kind of the
talent,
life.
Talent
of,
wins.
that's the life of a coaching staff and a managerial staff is that you get all of the blame and none of the credit.
Correct. And what is Torrey known for? What is Torrey known for?
If being a people person.
Exactly. Torrey is known for managing the
personalities
and the egos in that dugout and in that locker room. That's the one thing that he's most known for. It has nothing to do with baseball. Just that's the thing that he's known for. Everybody would say that.
But don't you know that the brains behind Joe Torrey was Zimmer?
Yeah, he was, but nobody, again, we all know, I think that we know the makeup of his coaching staff and how great baseball people were. And I'm not saying that Torrey wasn't, because he was, but the thing that he's known for in the, in the media and in the, just on the surface for casual fans was the relationships he had with all those big personalities. And I think that's just kind of speaks to the manager.
All right, the final question is from Dominic Raymond. What kind of contract do you think J-Hap will get after this year, provided he maintains his level of performance down the stretch? So now that Hap has been pitching well for the Yankees, I think some people are eyeing him as somebody they should sign in the offseason.
Yeah. So it's interesting, especially with the way contracts are and you know who's available and all these other guys that are going to be in the open market. He finished a 3-year contract just recently that was
$36 million.
Mm-hmm. I think he's looking at like a 2-year contract with maybe an option.
Right, because the age with him is a big thing. He's 36 years old, and then when you look at some of the other free agent pitchers, and there's actually two good lefties on the market in addition to Hap. You've got Corbin, who's 30 years old. You have Keuchel, who's 31. You also have Trevor Cahill, who's 31. He's having a solid season. And also the Dark Knight, Matt Harvey, is 30 years old. Going to be a free agent. So Hap's 5 to 6 years older than those guys. You might see Hap, I don't know, do you think Hap will sign earlier because it's just going to be a, like you said, a 2-year deal? Or is the market going to have to shake out and Hap is going to get the leftovers?
It's going to be very interesting. I think, well, I definitely think Hap is going to, if he's offered something earlier, I don't know what, he seems like a guy that likes to have security and likes to know where he is. So if I'm spot on with his personality and the way that he does things, that he may sign early just to be in a situation that he wants at this point in his life. But you look at last year and look at a guy like Alex Cobb, who was actually, coming off of a good year. He didn't sign until very late. I mean, he signed in what, March, I think, with the Orioles.
Mid-spring training. He didn't have a full spring training. So that was, I guess, some of the issues with him in the first half of the year was that he wasn't on schedule.
Yeah, and he was coming off of a 12-10 start with
good
3.6.
Stretch.
Yeah, with the Rays in 2017, and he was only 30 years old. So career highs in wins and games started, innings pitched. Like that's what you want to see, right? You want to see a guy like that who's able to hit those high points for a team that wasn't very good and still have a good season. So I think when you're looking at what J-Hap's going to do in the offseason, you can kind of circle what happened to Alex Cobb. And it could be a very similar situation. So, you know, at that point, Hap may say, okay, if the Yankees are going to be close to what I'm looking for, then maybe I like the situation. I know they have an opportunity to win. I could sign here. I could see him doing that.
Do you think the Yankees will be interested in signing him?
Yeah, I think they would. I think that he's proven that he can come over here, pitch well, and the fact that he pitches well against the AL East, I think, is a positive thing. So, yeah, I think they'd be interested for sure.
Do you think they would entertain bringing him and Sabathia back?
I'm leaning more and more and more to say that CeCe is not going to be back next year. The way that the second half, his health, if he were to come back on a one-year contract, it would be really, you know, it would be one of those where they're not relying on him. But yeah, I could see them.
Well,
still,
I think that was the
both.
Case this year, and he outpitched his expectations in the first half.
Agreed.
And then some other things happened where Sonny Gray didn't give them anything, so they had to rely on Sabathia.
Yeah.
I think if CeCe wants to pitch again, the Yankees are going to be interested in bringing him back.
I think so too, but there's more doubt in my mind now than there was certainly going into last offseason. I thought for sure that he might be able to pitch one more, but knows? Like he said, if they win the World Series, you know.
But I bet if we rewind a year ago to September, before everything happened in the playoffs, we were saying the same thing about Sabathia. And then he had a big October, and everything was, oh, we have to bring Sabathia back. So I think it's again, what is the last thing we just saw?
There's just so many question marks with this rotation right now, currently as it stands. And even going into next year with, like, you know, Jordan Montgomery, who has been an afterthought, is he going to be healthy and ready to go? Is that someone you can even depend on?
He had surgery in early June.
Yeah.
Correct?
So I think it was. Was it that late? I thought it was earlier than that even.
Okay.
Yeah.
It was May timeframe. So that's a year. That means he's not back until the second half of the season.
Okay.
Because he's got to build up strength.
So then we're not counting. Well, yeah, they've been coming back a little bit quicker from Tommy John, too. So I don't know what the timeline is. But yes, it'll be into the season, no doubt about it. How long into the season, I don't know. So they can't really rely on him. So, you know, maybe that at that point, you're bringing CeCe back. And if you get the half year of something for him and then something were to come back and you make an adjustment at the trade deadline, then it's worth it. But I don't know. It seems like he's to me, fading off a little bit.
All right, that's going to do it for the mailbag questions. Again, go to bronxpinstripes.com/podcast to submit those, and also call the voicemail line. It's 646-480-0342. We will talk to you guys on Thursday.
Believe it or not, George isn't at home. Please leave a message at the beep.
I must be out or I pick up the phone.
Where could I be? Believe it or not, I'm not home.
It's unbelievable that this team does not show any more passion than it does. When you have McCutchen, a guy who's been on the team in less than a week, in a bases-loaded situation, showing more emotion than the guys who are striking out. I mean, even Neil Walker, who, you know, has been terrible at points, is showing emotion. And you've got to get fired up in these situations. And if that stupid drum doesn't fire you up, then nothing will.
Okay, so bringing Robertson early ends up being a good call. You know what? How can you be optimistic when they're playing like such shit until Luke Voit comes in and crushes one off Fernando Arch shooting Rodney? Man, that felt good. Good win, boys.
Fuck Greg Bird. Luke Voit's the shit. That's all.
What a game by the Yankees. Great win against the Athletics. Great win. Hap, six innings, only gave up 2 hits, 5 Ks, and our bullpen took care of business after that. Robinson struck out the side and then hitless throughout the innings. And then, if anybody says they want Greg Bird over Voit now, you are stupid. Stupid, stupid, stupid. Voit came up clutch, and even Hintz Maria hit a home run, an insurance run, and that we needed. And it was such a great win. Like, I'm so pumped. I even set up late for this. It was so pumped. Glad we got the win. We got to move on. Keep pushing. Go Yanks.
Gary, put your fat ass in front of the ball. I've seen Romine block better plays than that. Jesus Christ. Go back to Scranton.
Game 3, inning 1, A's Yankees. This is the moment I am done with Gary Sanchez. I don't care if he can hit 40 home runs. He needs to sit. He needs to be pulled from the middle of the game. He needs to sit multiple days in a row until he's so fucking embarrassed he might actually decide he needs to try to have a job. Boone, step up. Fuck with this guy.
I just watched the most depressing inning of baseball I have ever seen in my 27 years of life, and it's all because of one Gary Sanchez. I've been the president of the Gary Sanchez's Cancel Fan Club for a long time now. They just showed him sitting in the dugout. He needs to sit in the corner and think about what he did, because this just sucks. Put Toe in behind the plate. Put anyone in behind the plate. I don't really care anymore. Put my left toe behind the plate. Just anyone who can catch the fucking ball.
Man, for the love of God, watching this team makes me want to throw sometimes. Like, I understand that, like, we have superstars, all this shit, but, like, at some given point, somebody has to, like, just go off on somebody, choke somebody in the dugout or something. Like, good God. Gary Sanchez is out here looking like a fucking little leaguer, missing all these damn balls. Sevy's looking like shit. Can't hit the fucking ball for shit. I mean, good fucking God. Like, hopefully we get this shit together, but God damn, this team makes me want to, like, pull my fucking hair out. I barely got hair to pull out. Shit.
You know, I was just listening to the podcast after the Yankees got destroyed in Oakland. And it was funny because Scott said, it was one of the most frustrating games he's ever watched, or frustrating innings, that first inning when the Yankees gave up 4. And I was thinking about staying in and watching the game tonight, or last night, or going out with my friend and get some sake bombs at the little sushi restaurant. So I decided to go get some sake bombs. And as I'm at the restaurant, I'm getting updates on my phone. They pop up and put a 4 spot in the first inning, and then he gets, it went up to 8. I was losing my mind. But, you know, I was a little intoxicated, so I was thinking, it's better than sitting at home wanting to run myself through a window. I don't get it anymore. I just thought that was a funny story. I don't know.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.